from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
I just want to say, look, I'm genuinely happy for the success that Tua's had, and I really wish him nothing but the best. You know, player relationships are very important to me. I think that's kind of the foundation of coaching. And I got into coaching because I was impacted as a young guy by my high school coaches, my college coaches, my going all the way to Pop Warner. I got into coaching because, you know, I want to make that same kind of impact, positive impact, pour into young people, help them become, you know, as KO says all the time, the best versions of themselves. That's really my goal always in coaching.
Brian Flores. So he kind of responded to what Tua Tagovailoa had said about Brian Flores.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a, you know, say a dust up. Miami is being relitigating Miami, whether or not Brian Flores was a good coach, his record versus Mike McDaniels. I saw a tweet from Ben Volin of the Boston Globe I wanted to bring up on this topic. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Happy Wednesday. Tua was always an interesting conversation. I think Bills fans like to either get after that guy.
I think he is the most interesting
non-Bill
for me ever. Because it's, he puts up numbers.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't look good to me ever. He doesn't, like, it's just, there's so many different ways to attack it and to look at his career. Even the way, I mean, the Flores part of this, the way it began was interesting. Right?
Yep.
Who drafts a rookie quarterback in the top five and then puts him in and pulls him out, in his rookie year like that? Nobody does that.
That's right.
Guys, and that's how we get to the Flores story.
That's right. That's how we get to the Flores story. And as you say it that way, let's pretend something else happened. Let's just, I mean, this is cherry picking to a point, but let's move around the years of his career in order.
Okay.
He gets drafted fifth overall. Mike McDaniels is his head coach. He goes in and he leads the league in passing.
Okay.
Then Brian Flores coaches him and he goes in and out and in and out and in and out. What would you think about Brian Flores?
I'd think he probably... I'd probably think he ruined a good quarterback.
Yeah, right. You think he can't coach?
I might,
how did you ruin this quarterback?
Probably. I might land in the same spot, which is that Mike McDaniel's a wizard.
Okay, sure. You might get there.
Yeah.
So
maybe.
Ben Volin pointing out, like, Flores went 10-6 and 9-8 with a rookie and second-year quarterback forced on him.
Yeah.
And he writes, this is a point you make a lot about Tua that I love to push back on. Ben Volin writes, it's not like Flores was the only one down on Tua. The Dolphins owner tried to replace him with Brady in 2022.
Yeah.
To which I would say, why does anybody act like that is any that has any relevance? How many quarterbacks would have been replaced by Tom Brady in 2022? Is it 15? The owner tried to replace you, right? Because he thought you stunk because you played for Brian Flores. Brian Flores did not know how to develop a young quarterback. Is not a, you know, whoever his offensive coordinator was. This is what we get to the conversation about how much credit does McDermott get for the Bills' offense and Allen's growth. We maybe don't give him enough. He got in the right guys that were here to get that job done. And in Miami, Flores, whoever's running that offense, bringing Fitz in as a guy that could go in, like, that's not the best way to develop a quarterback. We say this about Mac Jones. How did Mac Jones develop and go in New England? He had Matt Patricia as an offensive coordinator and Joe Judge. Like, who you give these young players matters quite a bit. Sure, there's going to be a talent, a baseline of talent you're trying to work with.
Mm-hmm.
But the Dolphins owner tried to replace Tua, right? Who wouldn't do that as the guy doesn't look good? Then he became one of the league's most prolific passers. You want to point out the warts? Go for it. But he's actually reasonably good.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Dolphins owner gives him like $200 million.
Remember, Flores didn't, though. Flores, the story of his lawsuit, which, by the way, the lawsuit is why Tua is still the Dolphins quarterback. If he never drops that lawsuit, Brady goes to Miami. Tua's not a Dolphin anymore. If Flores doesn't file the lawsuit, Tua is not a Dolphin today.
Well, this is where we get to the ifs again. And if Tua had Mike McDaniel first and led the league in passing, they wouldn't have sought Tom Brady.
Right.
Although maybe they would because Stephen Ross is a Michigan guy and, you know, go for a Michigan
guy. Remember, Flores left that boat.
Mm-hmm.
Flores wasn't the guy trying to...
He knew it was tampering.
Yeah, because remember, that was a whole scheme. That was Brady had a year left in Tampa. That was like a whole elaborate scheme to get him part ownership and then get him out of his final year contract-wise with Tampa to get him to the Dolphins. Also, by the way, remember, that owner was willing to take on Deshaun Watson. He flew to meet with him. So, but right, different phase of his career.
All of that is before.
Yes, it's before he took
off. You see that he can be at least serviceably good, get you in contention for your division. No, they haven't won the division, but they've been in contention for it.
Yep.
They lost it in week 18 last year at home with a bunch of injuries. And, you know, of course, the Bills got the job done.
I don't know. Like, the record's similar. The numbers are way better. Way, way, way better. Like, two more yards per attempt for Tua than when he was with Flores and then whoever their offensive coordinators were. Remember, they didn't even have a full-time one. They had like three different ones at once.
To me, it's a little bit like the Goff story. Goff gets drafted one overall and looks like a complete bust with Jeff Fisher. Horrible. This guy's worthless.
Yep.
Sean McVay gets the job. Oh, you know what? He can play. And then McVay decides, I still need somebody better. And he goes out and gets Stafford.
Right.
So
that's... Well, I guess we're not going to get it now.
We're not going to get that.
Maybe like Goff signed the big contract,
that's right.
And then within a couple years, McVay went, I need somebody better. And I'm wondering if that shoe ever drops for Mike McDaniel.
Does
he ever get to, he's good, but I need somebody better. I need somebody better. And maybe, you know, I don't think Flores was right in his way of treating Tua, even if he thought he was not a great quarterback, or if he just didn't want to deal with a rookie quarterback in the first place. But so I'm not defending his handling of the situation at all. But I don't know. Like I could get to the same spot a lot, which is I don't think I'd want that to be my quarterback because I think I'm going to hit my head in the ceiling. And I'm going to want to replace him eventually. And I'm wondering if the Dolphins are going to get there within a couple of years, even with the new contract.
Yeah, they very well might. And like it's worth pointing out, like you just said, Goff signed the extension and then never played under it for the Rams. He was traded before it even kicked in.
Right.
Which, it's another one of those things about the salary cap. Like, oh, here's $150 million for this guy, and he never played it down.
He played after signing the contract, but the contract didn't kick in by the time he... Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And Goff, like... He's limited in some ways, but what's the story on how they've protected his limitations? They've built like one of the best offensive lines in football. Because I don't know if this is true anymore. Like last year, I guess this was different, but I remember the point on Goff was he can't deal with pressure. Like don't let him deal with pressure. I guess he got better at that maybe, but in LA that was a part of the story, and the Lions just built him the best offensive line in the league, so it didn't matter. And what did the Dolphins do? Like what was Tua's limitation? Maybe it was he can't take hits. Or you can't have these long developing plays down the field. You can't ask him to extend stuff. And then what did McDaniel do?
Quick strike.
I'm just going to build my entire offense to be executed in 3 seconds.
Yep.
And it worked.
It has worked.
So you can build offenses around limitations. I just are Tua's limitations too much?
Does the story on them change at all if they win the division? Last year, not even this year, the Bills lose in Miami in a game they won by 7 with a punt return touchdown being the difference. How different is the story? Because Miami lost the division on a tiebreaker.
Right.
Now, the reality is maybe what happens is they host a playoff game and they lose it, so it's not that different. They would have the they would have the division banner to fly, but they would still have you can't beat playoff teams. Would have beaten the Bills.
It would be different. It would be different because they would have had to beat the Bills, right? Well, not even. Let's say they don't blow it against the Titans. Remember that game? Let's say Will Levis charges back 14 down in like the final 2 minutes.
Then the final game against the Bills doesn't matter.
Yeah, the final game against the Bills doesn't matter. They don't have to beat the Bills all year, and they win the division. And then they host a playoff game. Right, how different is it? It should be different. Even if they don't win a playoff game, but they've won the division, it would feel like they can topple the Bills. And that is a big question about them right now, is do you have it in you? Even a injured Bills defense, Diggs wasn't playing well, just all the problems, the coordinator change, all the problems that existed last year for the Bills. You had the league's leading passer. You still didn't get there. You still didn't win the division. There would be a belief, more of a belief, I think, if they had done that. But it is probably more about the playoffs for them than it is just getting over the Bills hump. Because last year that was minus, I looked this up the other day, they were minus 111 point differential against playoff teams.
Yeah.
Last year, like, You can't have that. You gotta, even if you won the division, like, that would still be mostly true, I think. So it would be different, but I think they have a lot to prove still in terms of, you know, the division and also what you do when you get to the playoffs. When's the last time the Dolphins won a playoff game? That has happened in my lifetime.
It's a long drought.
It's a very long drought. So I think they have a lot to prove this year.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, if you want to chime in. The other thing about the Flores Tua controversy, it doesn't even really have to be that controversial. He didn't coach Tua to Tua's liking. There are probably lots of coaches and players that might not agree on the style of coaching. The question is, did it work? Right? Flores is from the Belichick tree. He coached in a way that Belichick does. I mean, Belichick and Brady famously...
Right. Right.
Belichick coached, it sure sounds like, from the story from Tua, this guy tells me I stink every day, right? You're a young player.
Yeah.
Maybe you can't handle that. Maybe that's not the right approach for this player. And, you know, coaching a la carte versus person to person, who's the right coach for you?
Yeah.
That's how Belichick treated Brady in year 12. Oh, yeah. And that's what drove Brady out of New England, was he got tired of it.
But it took 20 years for him to get tired of it.
They did a ton of winning.
Yeah.
They did a ton of winning. And you will get plenty of players that, after their career, will say... Marty talked about this. Marty Baron, sorry. Just dropping Marty. This is an NHL reference. But Marty talked about this when we talked about Lindy, that there were times he hated him.
Mm-hmm.
But he felt like he made him better. So for Tua to say it and to tell his side of the story, that's fine. That's your side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have to mean Brian Flores is a terrible coach. It might limit his ability to be a head coach again with a young quarterback.
Yeah.
If I owned a team, I might worry about what he's going to do to a young quarterback. Is he going to, you know, kill the kid's confidence? But Flores up there with Harrison Phillips talking about how he's such a great coach and they're so happy to have him. This kind of goes back to the McDermott piece, Tyler Dunn's piece about McDermott, which was not all negative. It was just some players feel this way and some players feel that way. And, you know, you're gonna make people mad along the way. Do you win? What are your results? That's part of the Flores lawsuit. He had decent results.
Yeah, he had a winning record.
He had a winning record. He had decent results. He had a quarterback that maybe he didn't fit well with, but he got wins. He got results. He was not some 4-12 coach that showed he couldn't do it.
Yeah. Isn't the job of a coach, though, like, in part, now especially more than ever, to figure out who needs to be coached in which ways?
Well, the number one job of a coach is to win.
Yeah.
If you win and every one of your players hates you, you.
But to win, you got to.
You
get,
might not last that long.
Yeah.
But you'll get more jobs. Like you win.
But to win, you got to get the best out of your quarterback.
Sure. And if
and
that,
if you're coming in every day and killing his confidence, you're not.
Well,
gonna win, you're going to hurt your chances of winning, aren't you?
Not that depends. If you're coming in every day and telling him he stinks, and that kills his confidence, and then he stinks, you're not going to last. If you tell him he stinks and he gets mad at you and he plays great, you won. The job is just to win. I mean, Belichick is, again, to a fault, the Belichick story is here. Isn't this why Josh McDaniels coaches the way that he does? I mean, he's hated. His players hate him.
Right.
And a lot of the Belichick tree sounds like players talking about, this guy thinks he's Belichick. Matt Patricia is this.
Yeah.
Oh, the story's on Matt Patricia in Detroit. They hated him. If he had gone 15-2, all right. I'll hate you Monday through Saturday, and then on Sunday we won. And then I'll come in and maybe I'll hate you, but that's the idea. To a point, the Sabres are hoping this works. Are they not?
That's how they talked at the end of the season.
They liked Granato too much.
Yeah.
We need someone. I want to be coached hard. Some of these players with the Sabres are, again, like there's a spectrum here from killing a guy's confidence to demanding more of him. I mean, the Sabres are hoping for a little bit more Brian Flores flavor for their players, whether it's the young guys or the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Kevin Adams is looking for, is a little bit more, you want to call it sandpaper. We use that in hockey a lot, right? Sandpaper from the coach. A little more coaching hard, a little more accountability, whatever it might be. So I'm not on Flores. His style would never work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it works for some players and doesn't work for others. And for a young quarterback, I think that might be the spot where it's least likely to work.
Yes.
Careful what you do there. Careful what you do. Because he's the most important player in your organization. Your success is most tied in, of course, to a quarterback. That one might be the toughest part, is the player that he did it to.
Yep.
But it's not unusual to hear a coach rides a player. Isn't Kyer Elam's story this year, they got a new coach?
Mm-hmm.
And the last coach might have ridden him way too hard.
Mm-hmm.
And just let him loosen up. Let him get a fresh start here. Maybe that worked for other defensive backs on the team, but it didn't work for Elam.
Mm-hmm. That's where I get to the, like, I think you want to change it up. You want to know who, like, Tua, I think what you've learned about Tua is Tua needs a certain style of coaching. And there are other guys that can be coached hard. And I don't know, are they talking about that in Miami today? They're probably not. They're probably just blasting Flores repeatedly. But you now know. You know how you can't coach Tua like Brady. But that's fine, right? Like if McDaniel has the secret sauce for how to do it, he's learned, and combine that with your style of offense, then you've learned how to get the most out of him. It's really good, though. It's really interesting.
It is juicy. The Dolphins have been interesting for a couple years now.
Yeah. Again, Tua also is talking more this offseason than he ever has before. He was a quiet dude. He got mad last year that people found out he got married.
He got paid. Isn't that it?
He got paid. He was a little more vocal even before that happened, though.
Yeah, but then he got paid.
Quarterback market.
But then he got paid and walked out to practice and said, they showed me the money.
He yelled into a megaphone.
Yeah, I don't need to say the money changed him deeply, but it might have given him the confidence to tell a story.
Yeah.
And not worry about, like, the owner's going to hold it against them.
Man, I am very interested in their season. Who do they open with? The Dolphins open with Jacksonville.
And then they play the Bills in 4 days.
And then the Bills in week two. They got the Dolphins. Prepare for this. The Bills, if the Bills do not beat them in week two,
they're going to run away, right?
They're going to get out ahead. Their opening schedule. Home Jacksonville. Home Bills. At Seattle. Home Titans at New England.
Right. And then
like
Colts, even, Cardinals, who are not playoff teams of last year.
No, right. Like, okay, so last year, the idea of why the Dolphins aren't for real and the numbers on it is, well, they can't beat playoff teams. Who are they playing that's a playoff team in the first 2 months of the season? The Bills. Right? In their first, what is it? 8 games. The first half of their season, the Bills are the only team that made the playoffs last year that they play. That's it. So when do we learn about them? You know, if you want to hold that out, hold on to that as a a crutch for why they're not for real, you got to wait till the end of the year when they play Green Bay and San Francisco and Houston and Cleveland and the Jets twice. You know, you really look at the totality of it. It's kind of an easy schedule.
Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. We'll get a break in. Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast. When we return, the big controversy about whether or not Keon Coleman should have caught a ball in a preseason game made it to Coleman. He answered that question. So did Allen. We'll talk to Joe about that and other things, of course. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Some point later today, we have to have a grand celebration about the NHL GM that has announced that competing with other GMs is okay. Huge moment for the league. Competitive GMs. I mean, who would have thought in our lifetime we could have seen it? A GM that said he would compete with other GMs by signing offer sheets. Great moment. All right, 803-0550. 1-888-550-2550. Joe Marino on the Bills' performance in Pittsburgh, the injuries, all of it coming up.
Definitely. I feel like any ball come my way, I can catch it. Honestly, just a drop. Focus drop, got to look the ball in and make the play.
All learning experiences. You know, I know Mitchell said that he could have given him a better ball, and Keon's going to say he could have caught that. So if we can clean up a little bit of both, I think we're probably celebrating the end zone and everyone's staying calm. But Mitchell's also playing on a bad knee that drive, and I commend him for toughing it out. That's not easy to do, and he stuck in there to help his teammates. And
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly, beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Yeah.
Keon Coleman and then Josh Allen on the throw from Trubisky to Coleman right around the goal line. Incomplete. Talk about it with Joe Marino.
Trubisky was playing on a bad knee?
Yeah, he hurt his knee on the...
I mean, I know he hurt his knee, but...
He scrambled.
He played after?
Yes, that's the story. Jeremy and Joe joining us on the Western Hotline. Mr. Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast. One of the signs of football season and the turning of the season. The weather gets cooler, the leaves change, and Joe Marino joins us on a weekly basis here on Wednesdays. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy. Listen... You retweeting me on that Coleman catch, I'll tell you, that took it to another level. So thank you and not thank you for that.
listen, living the Josh Allen life, Joe, I feel like we don't get to spat as much as we used to on should it have been caught versus what should the throw have been better. I mean, was the last time that's really got hardcore Allen and Charles Clay? Like, how long has it been since we've really done that?
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's a good poll there, Joe, that Charles Clay play. Yeah, was it Clay? Could he have come back and made the catch, or could have Josh put a little more on it? But here's a comment on that Keon Coleman play. I think there's a little bit of nuance that we can invoke in that when you just extrapolate that play, catch the ball, right? Like you could say that the right thing to do would be to catch the ball. But I think it's perfectly acceptable from a fan's perspective to say, you know what? I can live with him not catching the ball because maybe he would have taken a hit. But we don't have to go back and say that it was a good thing that he didn't catch the ball. Take your silver lining and move on. But come on now, catch the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, with Coleman, you know, Joe, one thing I thought during the preseason, and I think this is just the nature of the new guy, the position that we've all been paying a lot of attention to. Bills fans are very eager to see the best that Coleman can offer. And there have been some highlights of that at training camp. And if you were there, you saw a lot of what he could put on display. But two preseason games, the Bills, despite their best efforts, they just haven't really been able to get that going yet. And that doesn't really have to mean much for the regular season. I think, you know, the controversy around that play might just be a symptom of impatience and really wanting to see what Coleman can bring this team.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to frame it, Jeremy. I mean, so much being made of this Bills wide receiver core and the transition away from Diggs and Davis and new players stepping in, and what does it mean for Josh Allen, and can he still put up the big numbers? So I definitely feel that urgency, and everybody wants to see Keon Coleman be this, you know, premier receiver. And maybe that doesn't happen right away. You know, he's a very young player. And I think what's funny about that play in particular is that the least of my concerns with Keon Coleman are his hands, right? Like, just that's probably his best trait. He's got exceptional hands. So I think we could probably have a better conversation about the fact that he presented an available target and got quick separation. That's probably the most meaningful thing from that play, because I really just don't find myself very concerned about his ability to catch the football with consistency.
Let's talk about the receiver room. You know, Coleman, he's a part of it, of course. We trust his hands. Curtis Samuel, the injury to him, turf toe, week to week. Joe, in your experience, you know, players along the way dealing with turf toe, is this going to be something we have to monitor through the season? I know, without the actual medical diagnosis itself, it seems like one where if a player has it at any point, it can be the kind of thing where it lingers. And it limits push off, it limits jumping. It really seems like a tough injury for a receiver to battle through.
Yeah, and wish we knew the severity, right? There's three different grades of turf toe, and so wherever Curtis falls in line will tell us more about, you know, what the outlook is here. And you see a lot of wide-ranging outcomes for turf toe, but I think everyone generally feels like it's something that can linger, and so that's definitely a concern for him this early in the season. And obviously he's got a pretty decorated injury history, so you kind of felt like this was part of the deal when you signed Curtis Samuel. But from what he offers to this offense is just a different dimension, right? And it'd be tough to build this offense with him in mind and all the unique things that he can do, and then all of a sudden that's just not on the menu anymore. So hopefully, you know, it's a lesser grade, and he's good to go, and he can be, you know, what this regime has signed him to be, because there's nobody else that really steps in and say, oh yeah, he can do the Curtis Samuel stuff, right? He's just a very unique player.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, did they have anybody that strikes you as able to do the Curtis Samuel stuff? I mean,
even some of it.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, if you, they say they have these receivers with these varying skill sets, and that's very much true. You know, if you lose MVS, you might have somebody that could do that. You might have thought that could be Claypool, but he's, of course, hurt too. So, you know, the way this receiver core has shaken out, you had maybe concerns about it going in. The injuries, I would imagine, are more concerning for you.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess on one hand, I think maybe the adjustment is as simple as we just don't do that stuff that Curtis Samuel does, and you run other things. But yeah, it's hard to find the one for one. I certainly couldn't talk myself into KJ Hamler, Damir Bird. I mean, he's such a new addition. It's hard to have any expectations there. But certainly a unique player, not just within this Bills receiver room, but kind of within the league. And there's just not a lot of players that you feel like can come in and bring all the versatility as a runner, down the field, quick separation, gadgety type stuff. I mean, pretty unique guy that brings a different dimension that I'm sure the Bills would like to have in full throughout the season.
So if he is going to be any threat of missing week one or be limited week one, Joe, in terms of how they'll use their top three guys, because the top three guys now, if he's hurt, are going to be Coleman, Shakir, and Hollins. Hollins and Coleman being on the field at the same time, just, I guess, how would you expect that to look if those three are the ones that are getting the most run in the first game?
Well, I still think you'll see those three players, but I think the Bills are going to run a lot of 12 personnel, and you'll probably only have two receivers on the field for probably a good percentage of the plays, if not maybe half, maybe more. So I think that's what they're going to lean into, and you know, obviously we'll get into Arizona in time, but I feel like the Bills, from a talent perspective, should have enough on offense to create enough stress for Arizona that you feel like, all right, if Samuel needs to kind of take that one off and see a Thursday night in Miami, you kind of feel good about that. I think Arizona will stress the Bills in some different ways, but I still feel like their defensive talent's kind of lacking, and the Bills should probably be okay if they had to get through that game without Samuel.
Preseason game number two. Joe, it's funny, like, the way that we've adjusted expectations for, in the Josh Allen year. This team might go the full preseason without an offensive touchdown, and I don't feel like there's that much concern about it just because we know the regular season and even the playoffs are where it matters. That game against Pittsburgh, it's no touchdowns, and the Bills' defense looked pretty darn good. Did you, looking back at it, think it's something they did in this game, just playing sound, or were there big, big concerns about Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, two guys that take a lot of sacks, that hold the ball an awful lot? Was what we saw in preseason game number two a little more about Pittsburgh or a little more about Buffalo's D?
It's probably a little bit of both, right? I mean, Pittsburgh, goodness gracious, just it's been a while since they've been able to figure it out on offense. And what's funny is their offense last year was terrible during the regular season. But if you remember the preseason, I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers were unbelievable. I think they scored on like almost every drive that their starters were on the field. Their defense was destroying everybody. And then, you know, their offense obviously really plummeted throughout the course of the season. And so just a lot of miscalculations at quarterback. And I don't find myself very optimistic about what they have right now. But I think that, you know, you still had a starting offense that was out there against the Bills that were certainly shorthanded on defense without a lot of important players in that game that are going to start and be factors. I think you could take a lot of satisfaction in the week-over-week improvements. It seems like the team played with a lot more juice and energy and made a lot more plays. I thought the defensive line was really terrific with how they played the run. They created pressure. I thought the back end was really secure. It was just a more cohesive effort all around. And I think, you know, obviously the score is probably the least of the concerns in a preseason game, but I thought you had a lot of individual performances, whether it was Javon Solomon or Joe Andreessen or Daquan Hardy, guys that Greg Russo, Ed Oliver, Taron Johnson, all of those good individual performances is what I'm left coming away with feeling optimistic and certainly the week-over-week improvement.
Andreessen, of course, the big story, not just here in Buffalo. I mean, he made it to Brian Baldinger's breakdowns. I saw Derek Klassen and Mina Kimes. And, like, nationally, people notice what Joe Andreessen did in this game. And I think there's, with the injuries they've got, there's a real conversation about whether he can make the 53.
Yeah, I think I do. I think that's where the conversation should land. And certainly he's earned more opportunity, and I'm sure we're going to see him a ton on Saturday against Carolina. But with how he's performing on top of the injuries, and it's not just Milano. I mean, Spector's banged up. Morrow's banged up. Ulofosio just feels like an IR stash type guy like they did with Justin Shorter last year. So I think the Bills are going to roster six. They've rostered six linebackers every year under Sean McDermott. Now, last year, of course, Baylen Spector went on an IR after the 53 was initially set, so they ran with five linebackers for a little while, but six is the number for the Bills at linebacker, and I think there's going to be a spot for Joe Andreessen, especially because of the kickoff coverage piece of this. And one of my favorite things about watching Andreessen against Pittsburgh was how good he was playing off contact, stacking, shedding blocks, disengaging, making plays. And he's doing it against James Daniels and Isaac Siamalu. Those are good NFL starting guards. And that translatability to the kickoff coverage to be able to stack, shed, make plays is going to be really valuable in addition to providing depth at linebacker. So I think the path is clear. And certainly if he doubles down against Carolina, it's going to be pretty undeniable that he deserves a spot on this 53-man roster.
What about Rousseau, Joe? It was only about a quarter, maybe a quarter and change. But, I mean, hard to ignore. I mean, that right tackle for whoever 77 was for Pittsburgh, just I don't even know that – like, this is Rousseau, right? It's not like he's pulling off these spin moves or he's ducking under. It's just – in this game, it was he was running at 77, and the guy just couldn't stay in front of him.
Long arms, heavy hands, and Broderick Jones, their second-year starter, first-round pick last year, just – Rousseau was able to really take advantage of a lack of ability for Broderick Jones to get his hands engaged with good timing. And that's where that length really comes into play for Rousseau, where he can just outreach people, and then he's got a lot of power and so much wingspan to be able to finish. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people, myself included, are hopeful for a big breakout from him, maybe the Ed Oliver-type breakout this year. And I think it's undeniable that he's been a great run defender, but can the pass rush, can the big-time pass rush show up? And that was a good sign. And I think really before he had that broken bone in his foot last year, it was week four, I think he suffered that, wound up sitting out week five. I mean, he was playing good football. He was on one heck of a tear. And then you could tell that foot injury kind of slowed him down a little bit. But if he can stay healthy and I feel like he does have the potential to be one of the most impactful defensive linemen on this roster.
Did you get enough of Dorian Williams to have any sort of comment on how he looked in his first preseason game since the Milano injury?
Yeah, I think this is when you bring in Pittsburgh as the opponent. I think this is where you can kind of find yourself not getting a great look, not a great evaluation opportunity for Dorian Williams, because he continues to be a very strong downhill player. I thought that showed up in a big way with that game, of course, against the Bears. The concern is coverage. And the thing about Justin Fields and Russell Wilson is neither one of them are very like rhythmic players that are going to keep things on schedule and take advantage of anticipatory throws between zones in the middle of the field, right? So the things that you're concerned about with Dorian Williams, this was the perfect matchup for that stuff to not be exposed in any way, shape, or form. So I think I had a conversation actually on today's episode of Lockdown Bills. I have Arthur Motes on, and we talked about the ability to grow in zone coverage. And Arthur kind of talked a lot about thinking about Terrell Bernard and the jump from year one to year two and how things kind of slow down a little bit. And he will be more able to kind of just trust the scheme and play faster and not think as much. And so, let him prove that he is going to have issues. Don't assume that he's kind of stuck where he was last year. I know there's been some concerns to this point in the preseason, but Dorian kind of gets the opportunity to showcase himself, and we'll see if he can grow. And I think that time that he's had now to develop and find some comfort in the scheme should position him to be better. But certainly I don't think the Steelers were a great evaluation opportunity to kind of measure where he's at.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. You can find the Locked On Bills podcast through the Odyssey app, everywhere you find it. And Joe's kicking it every day with the Locked On Bills podcast and joining us every Wednesday. Joe, thanks. We'll chat again after preseason game number three, which is kind of going to look like an old preseason game number four, right? Like, this one's going to be, I don't know.
It'll also be after cutdown day, because that's going to be next Tuesday, right? I don't know when. Do we find out about that on Tuesday, though? I don't remember how that works.
Tuesday at 4 is when they're due, right? And then you just never know if the Bills, they make everybody wait. So,
But usually it is that night,
Wednesday morning, I'm sure.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk then. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, guys.
Locked On Bills podcast. Highly recommend it. Jeremy and Joe with you, 803-0550.
Do we have any preseason tomorrow? Do we have to wait till the weekend? Tomorrow, Colts and Bengals. And Bears and Chiefs.
Caleb Williams.
They're not playing.
He is not playing, no.
Caleb Williams and Mahomes. How will we see more coverage of those two shaking hands before the game than the actual game itself?
That's a good one. Yeah, quite possibly.
Is Caleb Williams going to be working on his behind-the-back pass with Mahomes like pregame? He's going to copy everything.
How early is too early to get triggered over a 2025 NFL mock draft?
Is August 21st.
Too early?
Would be my answer.
It's too early? Okay. So you're saying I cannot be triggered by the mock draft I just saw posted at ESPN?
What is that going to mean? Someone's got a mock draft out there. It's got the Bills drafting like...
Hold on. I want you... Let's play like a Tonight Show game or whatever. You write down right now what it's okay for me to be triggered about. On this mock draft at ESPN.com, and when we get back, I will tell you.
I got an obvious answer here.
What it is. Not running back.
Oh, okay, well, that's what I was writing.
Something
down.
Else.
They're not drafting a running back?
Not running back. Something else.
Okay, it's probably not a punter.
When we get back, we'll chime in on that quickly. Jeremy and Joe on WGR. All right, let's see how our game went.
All right, I've got...
I asked you... When is it too early to be triggered by an ESPN mock draft for the 2025 draft? You said today is too early.
Today's too early.
But then you were going to lay out one scenario where it would be okay for me to be triggered by this mock draft.
All right. Well, I was going to write down Bills drafting a running back.
I eliminated that one.
You eliminated that one. So instead, I've written down Bills drafting a center. That's my guess.
Okay.
Bills drafting a center.
Well, there's a little bit more to it than that, but you're not that far off. ESPN has a mock draft up. Who did this mock draft?
How'd they do the order, by the way?
That's part of it.
Oh, that's part of the... Oh, okay.
That's something you might want to know. Like, oh, okay, okay. Where are the Bills picking in this mock draft? Answer, 26th. That's the division title.
All right. Or it's... No, wait. It would mean division title.
Yeah.
Could it mean wild card winning a couple playoff games? Maybe the same thing.
Sure.
Whatever.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Field Yates preseason NFL mock draft. Why not? Right?
Crazy.
But what did I do? Joe, I can't not do this. I do the thing that hey, look at that. There's a mock draft. Click. Scroll. Buffalo. Okay. The Bills are taking a guard. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Oh, and who's that picking directly in front of them?
Oh, no.
Cincinnati.
Okay.
And who are they taking? You might even be able to nail this name.
No, I don't think I'd ever.
You don't know any of the receivers yet?
Reggie Wayne Jr.
Emeka Egbuka, Ohio State.
Yep. Nice.
I'm just, you know, that's
one
just.
One pick before.
Hey, maybe by next year at the draft, I'm fine with that because the receivers here have blown up and are good. But, you know, right now I'm going to look and say, you're telling me the Bengals are going to draft Emeka Egbuka right in front of the Bills who then take a guard? I'm just mad. I'm already mad about it.
Who do the Chiefs take?
A defensive tackle.
All right, that's fine. That's fine. Where are they picking?
31st.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Not winning the Super Bowl?
No, that's right.
The Niners?
It's the Niners.
The Niners. Okay.
Yep.
Who's the last one? Who they got as number one?
Number one pick. Field Yates says the number one pick going to...
New England?
The Giants via a trade with New England.
Wow.
The other team you want to know where they pick is Minnesota, right?
Sure. Because
the Bills have their second round pick. He has Minnesota picking 7th.
Nice. So like 40th? 40th for the Bills' second round pick.
All right. It's break time. 803-0550 on WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.